We are back. Episode 201 is the new year. 201st. We're in the 200s. We're in the 2023s. How long will it be? Well, it is always a New Year's tradition. It's always a New Year's tradition. I'm going to say something that shows my age. That's what I'm warming up here. Y'all are like, where's he going? He's right off the base, out of the gate. He's headed somewhere, and I'm headed somewhere to say something that's going to show my age. It's always been a New Year's tradition. How far into the new year will you get before you quit writing the previous year's date on your checks? You know, you're writing out a check. You're going to be writing 2022 on that way up in February. I say it shows my age because nobody writes checks. Nobody hardly writes checks anymore. I still write checks from time to time. It's an age. Young people now. You get young people now and it's like, hey, you know, you're going to write me a check. And they're looking at you like, a check? What's that about? A check. Young person today, a checkbook, like one little thing of checks will last them like years. I'm still writing. I'd still probably be writing 2022 on my checks. I don't care. I don't care if it makes me sound old. We'll see how far we get before I can remember to write to 2023 on the checks. We are in a new year. We are in the 200s here with the Parish of the Patriot Show. We are back once again. We plan to keep on coming back. It's great to be here. Great to have all of you here. If you're new to the show, we do have a Christian-specific segment. It comes in roughly around halfway point of the show. That's what I shoot for. Sometimes I miss the target completely, but that's what we aim for. Be sure and stick around for it, whether you believe it or not. Trust me, you'll get something. It won't be what you expect. We are a congregation. We pass the offering plate around. I don't spend too much time on. I know y'all get tired. It's like everywhere we turn in the society, you know, somebody's looking for money, you know, and somebody's got the hand out, you know. So I don't spend a lot of time, but we do pass the plate around. If you want to support the show, if you get something out of it, it's easy to do. Just go to the bottom of the description page here on Radio Albion for the show. I got snail mail, got Bitcoin, got Monero, got email address down there for your notes. If you got a weirdo cryptocurrency, it's plummeted in value or something, I'm not proud. I'll take it. Send it to me. Drop me an email. I can get you an address for that. And one of the great things about, you know, passing the plate around is the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, well, another year of Clown World awaits us from Mr. T. And yes, it does. Anybody think it's going to be less clownish? Because I don't expect less. I expect less clownishness because everything is based on a lie. So, of course, it's going to be stupid. You know, it is. People think that, like, stupid and evil are an either or. You know, you hear people like discuss like what the government does and what happens in this country and things being promoted in these agendas. And you'll find people will get in like these debates, like, are they evil? You know, you have one side is like, that was part of their evil plan. It's part of their evil plan. They're trying to destroy us all. And you'll have other people arguing with them. And they're like, no. It's not that they're evil. They're just stupid. They got really stupid plans. They're disconnected from reality. And you people be like arguing. Like they never dawned on them that they are evil and stupid. The stupid part is probably lucky. If they weren't stupid, we'd probably be in even... We'd probably be in even more trouble than we are. Dear GPD, I already posted you a card this year, but it seems not to have reached you, so I am posting another. I'm quite sure this one won't get to you in time for Christmas. You were right. as right now here, we're having postal strikes. That is something Bitcoin doesn't suffer from. But I'm not into crypto right now. Anyhow, best wishes for Christmas and a new year. And that is from James. And it's fine, didn't make it by Christmas, you know, because it did make it. It did make it. By and large, I don't have problems out of snail mail. I mean, you know, all things considered, when you consider how many hands it passes through, I generally don't have any trouble with snail mail. So don't be getting like all paranoid. Merry Christmas, Grandpa Dan. I hope this finds you happy and healthy and ready for your big 200th episode. And yes, here we go. And we just continue on. Let us continue on as we're already at 201. It's quite an accomplishment to do such great work so consistently. Thank you so much for reaching out to all of us lost lambs and bringing us back to God's grace. And then helping keep us there with weekly insights. You're the best. Keep on keeping on. Love, David. And before I get off into that, you have a PS down here. And I'll just say the one I got before from you, it's hanging right here on my wall. I was looking at it before starting the show. It's because I got it here hanging up on the wall. Just so you know, it's not like I got chunked in a corner and forgot about it. Hanging up here in the prestigious recording studio for the Parish of the Patriot, here in the prestigious recording studio, a.k.a. my bedroom. My bedroom. Yes. anyway, as to the rest of saying very much, I'm very humble. I really am. I appreciate it. And believe me, I'm very humble. And y'all, again, if y'all weren't listening, if y'all didn't tune in and week out, I wouldn't be doing anything. You know, I mean, if nobody was listening, none of the words that spoken here on the show, none would mean anything because there wouldn't be anybody to hear. That's what I say. Y'all are part of this too. If y'all weren't here listening, then these words are going nowhere. You know, is like if you're out in the middle of the nowhere, if you're out in the desert by yourself and nobody around for 100 miles, you scream at the top of your lungs, but those words mean nothing because they got to reach somebody's ears. So I use the term congregation because you have to have that second part. And the fact that all of y'all are here, you know, that's what makes it all come together and mean something. And again, I'm humbled and I thank you for your kind words. You know, anything, if you know, the idea that what we discuss on the show does help, that's worth more than I can tell you. And I do that. I sit down on the show. We do this show every week and I sit down and I'm not out to like, what can I say that's really clever this week? Really? And I've said this before. I've talked about, you know, with the 200th episode and such, I talked about how I did this vision, what I wanted the show to be, and the work that it's taken, the time that it's taken to get there for the show to be what I want it to be. And this really is what I want it to be. I mean, I sit down and do the show. It's like if when it's done, when I'm done recording, when I think, you know, did we talk about something that can help people? I mean, yes, I want to be entertaining. I don't want it to be boring or dull or tedious or monotonous. And trust me, after 200 plus episodes, that becomes a concern. But at the end of the day, the idea is, did we say something that maybe somebody needed to hear? Did we say something that somebody, you know, it was that last piece to make something that was troubling somebody, make it all click and come together. And they could say, hey, now I understand. Now it makes sense. Now my faith is strong. That's the goal. I mean, if we can accomplish that, you know, if everybody listening is like, well, that was a mediocre show, but there was one guy that said, man, I heard exactly what I needed to hear. I've been troubled by this. And then it's a success. All the rest of you just got to bear with it. Everybody else was bored, but the one guy heard something he needed to hear. So, you know, hey, just when we do those times, if we do a mediocre show, just think to yourself, well, maybe there was something there someone needs. There was something there someone needed to hear. Dear Grandpa Dan, I have been thinking, and by the way, before I get off into the rest of this, I'll say I read the first part here, and you know, I'm glad things are progressing forward. I know things have been hard and things are tough, and you know, I this is what it's about. You know, we take each step forward, and I'll make this quick because everybody else sitting there scratching their head because you don't know what we're talking about. You know, just keep moving forward. We keep moving forward. This is it. We keep grinding on. Anyway, I'm glad certain things have come out all right, and I know there's still things you're anxious about and got going on, and I do. I've prayed that God will continue to guide you, and everything will work out. I mean, it will. Because I say that because life goes on. And, you know, it's going to work out one way or the other when we keep going through it. This is what it's about. Sorry. Anyway, addressing the myth, it's like an inside joke and everybody's sitting there. I don't get it. Grandpa Dan, I've been thinking the medical system is really geared to just extract money. See, this is how I know this is an American listener. If this started off with the healthcare system is a complete wreck and I have to wait 3 years, then I would know it's somebody, you know, from Canada or Britain. I've been thinking the medical system is really geared to just extract money. I know nothing new to most people, but really popped out to me this year. My family had health issues this year, and the first words out of every doctor and nurse's mouth is, go to the ER. In my area, all the hospitals are about $2,000 just to walk in the door of the ER, much less what the staff actually does. I found myself asking the nurses, you do realize you're telling me to go spend $3,000 to $5,000, right? Is there anything else we can do? And most of the staff say they understand my concern and then don't help any more than that. I've been lucky that I have insurance that has a semi-sane max out of pocket. So I have not been totally killed by expenses, but it's insane that to get any timely care, one has to either have really good insurance, a huge stack of money, or a foreign passport to get charity care. The USA spends more than every other country on earth on health care, and for middling results for the most part. Sure, if one has big money, they can get amazing care. But in a recent experience of ours, the hospital was at about 120% capacity. So people were having to double bunk in rooms not meant for that. It feels like another symptom in the overall rot and decay of the USA, that we're paying more than ever for medical care and getting worse results. Also, not for nothing, but about one quarter of all medical money goes to billing. There's a huge complex of medical coding and billing system that, with all that goes into a major cost center in it, a cost center in it of itself. So when you see your bill, about 25% of it is getting the bill to you. I hope you had a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Your brother in Christ, Mike. And Mike, you are literally preaching to the choir. You're preaching to the preacher here. Had my share, and I continue to have my share of interactions with the U.S. healthcare system. And I don't know the answer. You know, I really don't. I guess I do. I talk to friends, you know, that deal, like, say, with the NHS in Britain, and it's a wreck. One of the best memes I've seen recently, because memes, to be funny, have to be true, is the one where the guy, you know, little stick figure man, cuts his hands like, this is going to need stitches. And, like, it has the American flag, and it's like, that'll be $58,000. And then the British flag, and it's like, I can see you in 36 months. And then the Canadian flag, kill yourself. And that is, it's just... it's just the perfect meme. One of the things, the U.S. healthcare system, and like I say, it's the cost thing. If you don't live in the U.S., you don't understand. It really is. It's, as you know, I've had to deal with it this in 2022 more than I ever have in my life, and the insurance policy, like my deductible was like almost $9,000. I mean, it wiped out. You know, I was blessed in that I was able to pay it out, but it'd be just wiped out. Every penny of savings and scratch and come up, and it all went to this. And then the insurance kicks in and pays. You have to pay all this money, and then insurance kicks in and pays the rest. It's a lot of money. But I mean, then again, you look, and the insurance is paid probably close to $60,000 on top of that. I saw a deal years ago, and it was about people that go overseas for healthcare. Of course, they've made traveling overseas much more difficult now. We're becoming an open-air prison. When they build the wall, it's to keep us in. It's not to keep anyone else out. That's the secret. They're going to build the wall to keep us in. But anyway, the story is about people that go overseas. You know, they go to a place like Singapore, and they're getting like first-rate healthcare, you know, for procedures that would here at that time, because many years ago I saw this, at that time would cost like $50,000 to have done here, and they were getting it done for like $2,500 overseas. But see, they try to keep us locked in. We really are. Everything in our economy, we're literally treated like livestock. We exist to feed the system. We exist to extract wealth out of, to extract money. And then when we like need health care, it's like, you know, you get old, you're just supposed to die. You're supposed to die and go away, because, you know, you can't, once you outlive your usefulness to extract wealth from, then you have no use in this society anymore. One of the big problems with our healthcare system is insurance. And people never want to understand that, and they don't like it. People say, well, Dan, how would you fix the healthcare system? You know, and the, like, what do I want to say? The crash course, like the cold turkey solution to that. If you outlawed health insurance, the price would have to come down. It would. It would just have to come down. Otherwise, it wouldn't have anybody. We had health insurance for so many years, and it's just like payments. It's the same concept as how does a new pickup cost $70,000? Who affords that? But yet I see people driving around in new pickups. They cost $70,000+. I see them driving around there all the time. How do they afford that? Because they're making payments. They're not paying $70,000. They have an ability to write a check for $70,000. But for whatever reason, they can afford $1,500 a month. It's the payment. You go buy a car. They don't sell you on the price of the car. You ain't negotiating the price of the car. You're negotiating the payment. What kind of payment can you afford? That's all they want to negotiate with you. Insurance is the same way. What's your copay? What's your copay? What's it going to cost you to go to the doctor? And that, too, is a ripoff. People, when you shop, if you have to shop for insurance like me, in other words, that means you go in the government marketplace, the Obamacare, because I'm poor. You know, if you have, like, work insurance, it's a different story. But if you are buying a private policy for yourself, let me pro tip here, because people, they'll sucker you in, because people look at that, you know, look at here, it's got a copay. It only cost me $20 to go to the doctor. And that's what they want to jump on. It's $20 and it's only got a $2,500 deductible. This is the best policy. Trust me, as somebody who's had to deal major dealings with the healthcare here in the U.S., what you want to look at is that maximum out of pocket. You look at one of these policies, like $20 copay, $2,500 deductible. That's the policy I want. But you look over here, maximum out of pocket is like $13,000. Because, yeah, you hit that $2,500 and then they pay 50% or some crap. You see, you look at that maximum out of pocket. Because if you have to have something major done, that's what you're going to care about, is that maximum out of pocket. Trust me. And, you know, the copay thing, look, you walk into the doctor, like you walk into your private doctor without insurance, it's going to cost you like $50, that, you know, maybe 80, whoop-de-doo, that's not going to break the bank. You know, that $20, it only cost me $20, copay. Look at that, my pro tip, look at that maximum out of pocket. That's the one you're looking at, because if something really bad happens, you don't want to get hung out to dry. Get hung out to dry, that maximum out of pocket. Talk about people. And you pointed out like how much of it, that like you get 25% of it just going to the building, because I have to code everything. It was funny, before I got my insurance plan, so it was late to say 2021, and I go to the doctor, I just pay. You know, and you go to the doctor and you're like, and they wouldn't know what to do. If you did, you go to the doctor. And like for instance, when I had to go to the dermatologist about the skin cancer. And like you go in there and you're like, well, I'm just paying for it. And they're like, well, what policy do I don't have a policy. And they wouldn't know how. It's funny, because I'm laying there where this guy's cutting this thing to take a biopsy of this cancer off of my skin. And I'm having to lay there while he's doing this. And I'm listening to like three different women going back and forth, because nobody knew what to charge me. They didn't know how to. It's amazing. You got all these people that work in quote unquote billing and nobody knows how to charge. If you walk in there with no insurance and say, hey, you know, I'm just paying for this. I don't have no insurance. I'm just going to pay for it. No one knows how much it costs, because they just put codes in. That's all they do, is they put codes in and send it to the insurance company. Nobody knows how to just pay. And see, that's part of the problem. It's part of the problem. People just paying to, and you have these discussions with people that are older, such as myself, or even older than me. And then they'll talk about, you know, well, what was different? What has changed? I was discussing this with somebody much older than myself here recently, and they were like, you know, back in the day, you know, you could just go in and just pay for it. You went to the doctor and it's like, how much does it cost? And you just paid for it. Well, aside from the fact that money was worth more then than it is now, there's the fact that doctors weren't having summer homes in the Bahamas either. Everybody wants to be a specialist. Back in my day, if you broke your leg, you went to the doctor and they put a cast on it. You don't do that no more. Late 2021, I broke my foot. Go to your regular doctor, say, hey, I broke my foot. You know what you're going to find out? They don't do anything with that anymore. You have to go. You have to go to the specialist because you broke your foot. I kid you not. Everything is specialist, because specialists get charged more money. The regular doctor don't even treat broken bones anymore. They write prescriptions. That's about it. And all of them want to write prescriptions. That's where the money's at. They want to write prescriptions. You got me off on this healthcare talk. They want to write prescriptions. But other than that, they're going to send you to a specialist. Like, I got this really bad ingrown nail. Got to send you to the podiatrist. And they'll send you to one specialist after another. When they found the kidney cancer in the scan, because I had these scans, you know, and they found the kidney cancer, which wound up being my second cancer surgery of 2022, which is a really nice year. And spending money on the healthcare. Anyway, like when they found the kidney cancer, they didn't just say, well, okay, we'll go ahead and set you up with a surgeon to cut that out. No, you got to go to the urologist. You go to the urologist, and the urologist said, we're going to do another test. But I already got this test. They done scammed me. They did the guy that I got this too many years. I got to get another test. So you got to go to the urologist, and he gets to charge you to say that, to look at the results that the other doctor found and go, wow, you probably got a kidney cancer. And then they send you, finally, you get another test, and you go back, and they say, yeah, this test shows you got a kidney cancer. Yeah, I knew this. That's why I'm here. Then he finally refers you to the guy who's actually going to do the surgery. They pass you around, and every time you get passed around to somebody else, it's more billing, more money. I don't know the answer. Well, I mean, I do know the answer. If everybody just had to pay, the price would have to come down because they wouldn't have any customers. If everybody had to just pay the write a check for a new pickup, they wouldn't be able to charge $70,000 because they'd all go broke. The price would have to come down. Anyway, yes, so you got me started on the U.S. healthcare system. I can go on about that. Y'all like, no, please don't. We got enough. We get the point. It's bad. It's really bad. Y'all ain't had to deal with it. Because most people don't. You know, you spend most of your life. Look, I'm one of those people. You probably count the number of times I've been to the doctor in my life on one hand prior to 2022. And let me tell you, that's how life is. I'm a healthy person. I don't go to the doctor. I'm not one of these people that runs to the doctor every time they stub their toe or get the sniffles. I got sick over Christmas and people are like, do you think you got the COVID? I'm like, lol, not going to know because I won't go take the test. I just get over it. It's what I've always done. It's the way we always did it before they started this new thing of naming these sicknesses. We give them a scary name and you got to go get a test to go to the doctor. Dear Grandpa, hope this finds you well and you had a nice Christmas. Did you find this year that not many folks sent out Christmas cards? I don't know about you, but I usually get between 6 to 12 cards each year. This year, I sent my usual amount, but received none. Maybe something to talk about on the show. The changes in society that cause folks to be depressed enough to not participate in Christmas or causes them not to care. Just a thought. All the best. That's from Jackie. And you know, you're right. I have noticed that. And I got to confess, I don't think any Christmas cards went out from my house this year either. But see, I don't normally take care of that. Maybe I'm going to start take care of that. Send out cards next year. People are becoming, it is a good point, people are unplugging. You know, maybe it's a case of people just becoming so unplugged. I don't know. So it's isolated. Things have become so hostile. People don't even want to interact with other people anymore. You know, they want to avoid other people. I don't know. You're right. It's a sign that people are unplugging. I don't know. And Christmas, and of course, I went on my Christmas rant this year about the commercialization and making everything about Santa Claus. I think a lot of that is what is maybe a part of it too, you know. We've so detached ourselves as a society from the religious meaning for us for Christmas. The reason for the season, as they like to say. We've unplugged from that and made it all about commercialism and Santa Claus. You know, there's not a lot to celebrate there. You know, they want to take Christ out of Christmas. And, you know, if it's all about going and buying crap and Santa Claus, then what's the point? Unplug and don't send out the card. But it is a symptom. And you're right. It's a symptom of how people are really just, I don't know. The society is alienated everyone. You know, everybody's so alienated from one another. Everything is, I don't know, people are just, people are afraid to say anything because if it's deemed offensive, then you're going to get in trouble. If it's deemed remotely controversial, they go back and now they go back and hound you for something you might have said or written like 5 years ago. And everybody just wants to unplug from it all. This is not the way that healthy, much less functional, much less healthy societies operate, where everybody just wants to isolate from one another. Nobody trusts each other. Is it a society? It's not a community. Everybody's just isolated or afraid to say anything. You know, people, they're creating this atmosphere where they're encouraging the government. I say younger people don't know. Those of us that are getting up a little bit in age, I'm in my mid-50s now. And the idea, when I was a young man, the idea that the government would be openly promoting people snitching on one another to the government, which they do now. They openly promote snitching on your neighbors and running around and this culture they've promoted of distrust. It's the Bolshevik model, by the way. This is not anything new. Where everybody running around snitching, encouraged to snitch on each other. And he causes this distrust. It breaks any kind of societal bond. It's not the least bit sustainable. It really, you know, I look back on what Christmas used to be like, you know, in years gone by. And it really has. It's just another one of those things that's been taken away from us. We've lost so much. They keep telling us we're making progress. This is all progress. And yet we keep losing stuff. We're not gaining anything. What are we gaining? All of this supposed progress that we're making, all of this, they keep telling us we're making all this progress and this is what, you know, this is what progress looks like. But all I see are things we're losing. Things they keep tearing down. Things we don't have anymore. You know? The spirit of community, the spirit of Christmas, the spirit of where people would just like, I don't know. I hate sounding old. But you know, Christmas used to be a time when like people just kind of forgot all the BS. You know? And it was like, Merry Christmas. And people just, now if you say Merry Christmas, you feel like you're making a political statement. You know? Because you're supposed to say Happy Holidays. You could offend somebody that's not a Christian. It's Happy Holidays. I don't know. There used to be a time when people did. It was a time when people just kind of blocked everything out and just tried to be happy. And people were in a better mood. You know, once it really got down to Christmas and people were in a happier mood. And it's like now it's like people are stressed out. They're trying to figure out how to buy some crap that they don't need. How to buy presents for people that don't need presents. You know, and it's just become another stressor on the people, on society, on people, when they're already stressed out. They're already stressed out from living in clown world. That's why we got to come up out of it. You know what? Other people can be like that, but we ourselves, we need to be light. We need to be light. We need to just say, you know what? We're not going to get burdened down by that. I don't go out and buy crap for Christmas. You know, I don't go and buy a bunch of crap I don't need at Christmas. I don't do that. But I do remember the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And I'm just going to be happy. We got to come up out of this society. The society is one of depression. The society is one of oppression. The society is one of isolation. They want you distrustful of everybody. They want you on your edge. They want you off guard. This is like a massive psychological operation, a psyop that is being done. I would say it's a spiritual psyop, but I'm about 2 minutes early to start preaching. But this is big. Don't participate. Be happy. It's a funny thing because I've been accused all my, you know, for years now. I didn't say all my life, but I've been accused for years now of being this evil hater. and I always joke to say anybody that knows me in real life likes me. You would like me. I'm a friendly person because I don't live my life going around, you know, feeling an emotion of hate. That's just silly. It's just stuff to. And anyway, you approach people like when I interact with people, IRL, people I've never met before, IRL. I am. I'm a friendly person, and it's so funny because people will be taken aback. Not because they know who I am and this guy's supposed to be an evil head. Nothing like that. But just people are on their guard. You can see it. You can see when people, you first start to interact with somebody. And you can tell, and this is something that has changed through the years. And people start off, you could tell, they're on their guard. Like, this person's fixing to speak to me. What do they want? You know, and when you're friendly and you're outgoing, you're like, how you doing? You know, y'all doing all right? You know, da 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 da, making comments. And you can see people at first, like, they don't know how to process that, you know. But then a lot of times, then that you can almost see, like a look of relief. Like, oh my gosh, this person's just actually being nice. That's it. That's how you should be living your life. Look, you're right. People are depressed. People are on edge. Things are getting bad for people. And people that have a lot of people are fixing to become even more uncomfortable than they were before. In a lot of ways, those of us that have had to learn to make do with very little for the years, we're kind of ahead of the curve. People that have been used to living a better lifestyle are going to get a major adjustment in the time coming because society is collapsing, the economic order is collapsing, and things are going to get harder. I hope that all of us, you know, we can just live our lives and be positive, you know, as positive as we can be. And be happy because, dude, people are on guard. People are always like on edge now. Everybody's on edge. I'm not going to live my life like that. You know, and don't get me wrong. If somebody's an asshole, I'm not going to put up with any nonsense. But I mean, by and large, I give people the benefit of the doubt. When I interact with people, I try to be nice to people. I'm not going to live my life constantly on edge and just so distrustful and just the way this society is. Depressed, distressful, isolated, you know, that's what they want. You know, well, I'm not going to live my life like this. It's my life to live. It's not the government's life to live. It's not lobbyists' life to live. This is my life. And I can choose how I'm going to live it. And all of you can choose how to live it. We can go around and be miserable and angry and frustrated and all of that. Or you can just live life. Look, that's how I live life. This is how I'm going to live my life. I'm not going to live my life being angry, frustrated, upset, and obsessed with things that I have no control over. I'm not going to live like that. I talk about these things that go on. We talk about truth, and I'm happy to tell somebody about it that wants to hear it. But I'm not going to live my life obsessed over things. I can't do anything about the economy. I can't do anything about the corrupt government. I can't do anything about the collapsing moral structure except to speak the truth and shore up what remnant we are. That's what I can do, but I'm not going to live my life being miserable over mostly things, because mostly what makes people miserable, I'm kind of getting off on something. We need to get into the Christian specific segment, but most of what makes people miserable is being caught up in stuff that they have no ability to change anyway. You know, being obsessed over things that don't have the power to fix. I don't have any effect. I don't have any influence on government policy. I don't have any influence on social media's policies or who gets banned, who doesn't. I don't have any influence on what the lying press says to people. I don't have any influence over the political situation or international relations or any of this stuff. I'm interested in it. I talk about it, but I'm not obsessed over it. I hope every one of y'all, I hope you can find a way to just find some joy in life. Be happy. Quit getting so caught up in stuff that you don't have any control over. It's good to be aware of it, and it's fine to discuss it with people that are interested in discussing it. You know? But find some, we got to go on with life. You know, really, we got to keep living life. And I'm not going to live my life being miserable. I refuse. I won't let them have that power over me. I'm not going to let anybody have that power over me. I'm going to try to live my life. You know, I'm not saying I'm happy all the time. That's not realistic. But I'm going to live my life to the fullest I can. I'm going to enjoy it the best I can. And it doesn't make you more holy or more righteous to be miserable. It doesn't make you smarter or more enlightened to be angry all the time. I'm not living like that. I just refuse. And I hope y'all do too. In other words, when it comes to things like Christmas, you know, make the best, make it what you want it to be for yourself. If everybody else is looking at you with distress, say Merry Christmas anyway. We've got to do this. It's all about how you're going to live your life. I really do. I, 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 Anyway, I believe that we're going to get into the Christian specific segment. Thank you, everybody. I always love it when we get enough listener support or mailbag where basically we can kind of spend the whole show on it. I really do enjoy that because sometimes I don't know what I'm going to discuss. You know, it's like, what are we going to talk about? Yeah, there's only so much you can say that everybody else isn't already saying. So I do appreciate it. I always enjoy the back and forth, the feedback. And of course, I really do appreciate any and all offerings you can make, any tithes you can pay. I really do appreciate it. It makes a big difference. And I really do appreciate it. But we got to get into the Christian specific segment. So again, if you're new, I hope you'll stick around for it. It won't be like what you hear anywhere else, but regardless, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. So as we settle in this week, we're going to look at the 139th Psalm. And I was sitting here in and out on whether or not to read the entire thing, and I've decided I'm going to read the entire thing. And this psalm deals with love and hate. Love and hate. And the reason I thought we would discuss this psalm and read it is because I'm going to say something that you're not going to hear in any. I guarantee you can go on any Sunday here in America or and anywhere in the West, go into a quote-unquote Christian church, and you're not going to hear what I'm fixing to say. And that is that hate has gotten a bad rap. Well, we've got laws against hate. You can't be hating. Hate love. Hate crime. Hate speech. Hate. Hate has gotten a bad rap. All the Christian churches talk about is love, and they leave out hate. Is hating ever okay for the Christian believer? And we're going to find that answer here in the 139th Psalm. You know, we always talk a lot about how everything in our Bibles, and I believe that everything pertaining to the Lord has to do with action. So by and large, when we read about things like love and hate, you know, we always try to talk here, or as we have these discussions, we try to focus on what actions are associated with that. I've said before, you can have, say, if you go to a regular church, and there could be a brother there in that church who's just as saved as you are. You know, but for whatever reason, just personality type, whatever, you don't like that guy. And we're never commanded. And understand this, as Christian believers, God never commands us to lie. Let me phrase that a different way. He never commands us to lie, especially to ourselves. And you'll have people, and they'll lie to everyone around them and lie to themselves and think that makes them a good person. Because they say, oh yes, he can be difficult, but I love him. And they say this insinuating that they have this emotion, this feeling of affection towards this person. And it's a lie. They're lying to themselves. They're lying to the people around them. God doesn't command us to do that. When God talks about loving our brother, he's talking about how we're going to behave towards him. And again, we've talked about this before. I'm not going to beat it to death. But, you know, what kind of action? Do you cheat that person? Do you treat them fairly or not? That is your love. You're required to pretend that you're having a feeling of affection towards somebody that you don't. For whatever reason. Could be personality clash. I mean, the guy could really, you know, he could be a Christian brother and okay. But in other aspects, you find him to be a real asshole. Whatever the case may be. We're not required to lie to ourselves about having a feeling of affection, but you can still love your brother. You can still love your brother by the actions you take. And I do. I believe this. That having been said, I mean, there are feelings that can be, there are feelings, obviously, that we classify as love and hate that do exist within us. Our emotions. I do believe we should always try our best and strive to master our emotions. People now are so emotional. You know, they let their emotions drive them over here and drive them over there. And it's no worse, and it's no different, rather, I'm sorry, than drunkenness, you know? When I was a very young man, you know, I could drink with the best of them. I could drink a lot. And you know, when you're a young man and you like go out with your friends, you know, and y'all get drunk and stuff, and you would have those days like the next day, and like you feel like you got to make the tour of shame, where you go back around everybody that you were out with the night before and apologize because you like remember you made an ass out of yourself, and you're like, man, I'm I'm sorry about that. I got a little carried away, you know. But it's the same way when people let themselves get too carried up, too caught up in their emotions. People get emotional and they wind up saying things they shouldn't say. They wind up doing things they shouldn't do, taking actions they shouldn't take. Getting caught up in your emotions. We should not let our emotions master us. I believe one of the ways that Satan manipulates us, gets us off track, gets us going in the wrong direction, is when we let our emotions control us. He manipulates our emotions. Even if it's not directly, he can manipulate what other people say around us, the way we perceive what other people are saying and the world around us. And when we get caught up in these emotions and you get dragged around by your emotions, you're going to wind up saying something, doing something you wish you hadn't done. In the best case scenario, you can go around and make the tour of shame and apologize to people. In the worst case scenario, you can damage relationships that you can't ever repair. You can find yourself doing something that you look back and you say, oh my gosh. You know, I look at people and we have these instances where people get caught up in road rage, you know, and then somebody, you know, the traffic's bad and they're trying to get to work or they're trying to get to pick their kids up, whatever the case may be. They're trying to get somewhere and the traffic is really bad and they wind up getting in these road rage incidents and they wind up, you know, pulling a gun out and waving it at somebody or whatever. And they're mad because they got cut off and all this. And then they wind up, you know, like getting arrested and thrown in jail. And they get in a road rage and they shoot somebody. And then they wind up in jail. And I always think the next day when they wake up and they're not mad anymore, they must be thinking, what the hell have I done? Now I've ruined my life. All because somebody cut me off in traffic. I could have waited. It had been like 5 minutes and I would have been past that part and the traffic opened up. All the rest of those people that were also stuck on the highway got home. But I'm not. I'm sitting in jail. Why? Because I let my emotions rule me. I let my emotions get carried away and carry me. I got carried away by my emotions. They got a hold of me. You don't want God. God made you to be free. He didn't make you to be a slave. Not to your emotions, not to your lust, not to anything else. You're not supposed to be a slave to your emotion. You can't have your emotions just whipping and dragging you around. Doesn't mean you can suppress them and make them go away. It means they shouldn't master you. This is another one of the things that we are tasked with in our spiritual growth is becoming to where we master our emotions. In other words, we do not let them control us. You know, they exist. We can't do anything about that, but they don't, we remain in control. Our feelings, we have our feelings, but they shouldn't be our master. They have their proper role. All of these things, there are a lot of things that get twisted up in people's lives. And it's like the thing in itself isn't necessarily bad. It's filling an improper role. We're going to get to this psalm here in a minute, I promise. We're kind of getting a long preamble, I suppose. But you have these things, and they of themselves are not a bad thing, but they take up the wrong role. As you pray and you seek God, there's going to be times that you pray and seek God and you feel a peace come on your heart and you feel like you're just confident. I mean, you feel like you could march out in battle or something. You know, you just feel the presence of the Lord and you praise God and it's like, yes, you know, and your faith is boosted and you do. You just feel confident in the Lord. And it's easy to misinterpret that feeling. And it's a good feeling. There's nothing wrong with that feeling. But it's really easy to misinterpret that feeling as faith. And what'll happen is there'll be times come around and you got stuff going on and you pray. And instead of having that feeling, you're full of turmoil and anxiety and your mind's going all kinds of places. And you think my faith has failed me. And by extension, you might wind up thinking that the Lord has somehow failed you. He's not around. He's not hearing your prayer because you don't feel that peace on you. Faith is when all of that stuff is going on in your head and you feel you don't feel comforted and you get this voice telling you that maybe God has abandoned you. Maybe you're all alone and maybe something you just screwed up so bad. He's done with you, whatever. And you ignore that and your faith says, no, I trust God. Because your faith, again, it's not an emotion. There are many things like that in and of themselves, they're not a bad thing. But if they take up the wrong role, they get out of hand, and then they become a stumbling block for us. We could probably, I'm not going to get any further off into that because we're running out of time without even getting into the psalm that we were going to get into. But yeah, there are many things, and again, maybe we'll discuss this in a future show and really bear down on this a little more. But there are many things that we see in this world, and they become a stumbling block for people. But the thing itself is a part of God's law, is a part of the natural order. But we let those things start taking up the wrong roles, and they become, like I say, they become a stumbling block for us. So let's go ahead and get into this 139th Psalm, because I'm about 10 minutes into this segment, and we haven't even touched on this. And I decided, I decided to go ahead and read the whole thing. And it'll probably be a read and stop sort of scenario this week. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get into the 139th Psalm. O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my downsitting and my uprising. Thou understandest my thoughts afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. God, this acknowledgement, he's saying, I am following the Lord, I am seeking God out in all I do, and God is aware of all things. God is aware when I get up, God is aware when I sit down, he's aware of all things. And in knowing this, in your prayers and such, you know, you remember that you're not informing God of anything. I think a lot of time our prayers have more to do with, you know, we're expressing so that we ourselves put it into words and really gain an understanding, gain a certain amount of power by verbalizing the things we're dealing with. You know, maybe when we say them out loud, these things become reality. I always say, you know, we hear in the New Testament, we read in the New Testament about, you know, confessing our sins. And people who interpret that think that you're supposed to go like before the church and tell them every dirty secret you've got. And I don't believe that's the case. I really don't. I don't think that's the case. I don't think that serves any actual purpose. Or confessing our sins, we verbalize, whether it's to a fellow believer or just in our prayers to God, but we verbalize these things and we say them out loud so that we can acknowledge them. Overcoming these things starts with acknowledging that they exist. As long as people are running around saying, I don't have a problem. That's not a problem. That's no sin for me. That's no stumbling block for me. What are you talking about? I'm just fine. God ain't going to help you. God ain't going to help you with that because you ain't even acknowledged you got something you need to deal with. I do. We confess our sins, we pray, and we verbalize these things so that we're not informing God. He already knows. As he says here, you know when I get up, you know when I lay down, you're all around me because I am yours. Not everybody is God's. God isn't micromanaging, looking. He's saying God is aware. As a child in Christ, God is aware of me. It doesn't mean he's babysitting me. It doesn't mean he's micromanaging my life, but he's aware. There's a lot of people he's not aware of everybody. He doesn't care because there's a lot of people that are just not of him. They're not of God. But the takeaway is that you're not informing God of anything. He already knows. So when we confess our sins, when we verbalize these things to God, we're really putting them out loud so that we admit, so we understand what we're dealing with. We're not informing God of anything. He knows all our ways. Let's pick up at verse 4. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Without even speaking, God knows. Have you ever prayed? And I hope you have. I hope you've had this experience and you pray and you really are just reaching out to God with everything in your heart. But you don't have any words. You don't know what to say. I mean, really, what are you going to say to God? And yet you long to be close to him and you love me, but you can't really, you can't necessarily put it into words, and yet he knows and you can feel it. So just reach out in the spirit and reach towards God. And yet he knows. You know, it says here, there's not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Without me even saying, you know it altogether. He knows. And we reach out and reach for, you don't have to, we're warned again in the New Testament. That's what I love, and I've said this before, It's a shame that the churches, that so many churches have basically abandoned the Old Testament. You know, the old and the new go together. I can sit here and go back and forth between old and new. You read this, and then you look at the New Testament where it's warned what? When you pray, don't pray like the heathen who think with all of their babbling words they're somehow going to reach God with that. And you take that from the New Testament and look here. Without even speaking, there's no words on my tongue, and yet you know, oh Lord. It's amazing. It's how it all ties together. Let's pick up verse 5. Thou hast beset me behind and before and laid thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain to it. I cannot attain unto it. I'm sorry. Whither shall I go from thy spirit? Or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the utmost part of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. And darkness and the light are both alike to thee. For thou hast possessed my reins, thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not hid from thee, when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned, when as yet there was none of them. So, yeah, before even existing, you know, God knows us because he exists outside of time, as we know. And he says, you know, you knew me before I was even made. Before I was even formed, you knew the secret most parts of me. This, we're going to continue on. How precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I should count them, they are more in number than the sand. When I awake, I am still with me. I'm going to stop there for just a second, because here ends the part of the psalm dealing with love. This is the love of the Lord. David is summarizing what his love of the Lord is like. It's all encompassing. He said, I walk with the Lord, and if I were to try to run away, I couldn't get away. You are there. You are with me, O God. What a solid and sure faith this has been, that has been verbalized, you know, been illustrated rather, I guess, for us. You know, so often we go around as believers and we have this attitude like God is just looking to bail on us, you know, if we screw up one time, he's gone. That's usually a lot of times when our faith begins to waver. It's because we have this attitude that, well, we did it this time. I didn't live up to God's standards today. And today is it. He's had enough. Got this hardship. I got this trouble. God's gotten me out of every single other hardship and trouble that's ever come about in my life. But this time is different. Too often we have this attitude like God's love. Like God is just looking to just get out. He's looking for the exit. He's looking to bail on us. And yet David surmises here, this is what the love of the Lord, this is how it is. You are with me. If I tried to run away, I couldn't. If I flew up to heaven, you're there. If I went and made my bed in hell, God, you were there. You were there. You encompass all about me. There's nowhere I can go that you are not, for you know who I am. Does this sound like a man who thinks that God's just looking for the exit and just looking to bail on him and leave him to his own? You're on your own. First chance he gets. If I were to try to hide myself in the darkness, you would see me. the darkness, the darkest darkness and the lightest light, it's all the same to you. You see all of it. You see all of me. How great are the thoughts of the Lord. There's so many that it can't be counted. We can't even understand and grasp what God knows and way he thinks. This is how our faith should operate. This is how our understanding of God's love. This is that love. This is what love is. God is not looking to bail on his first chance he gets. He's all encompassing. If I tried to get away, I couldn't, because I'm his. I'm marked among his people. He's there. He is there no matter where I go. If I went into the sea, he's there. If I went to a high mountain, he's there. For all that Christian churches talk about love, they don't really define it. People think it's just going to be this emotion. This is love. David has given us a summary of what God's love looks like. He's not looking to bail on it. If I tried to get away, I couldn't. For your hand is on me. You've got my reins. You know where I'm at all the time. If I tried to hide, I couldn't. It's like I said, I don't understand. As much time and effort and time has been put in your average Christian church talking about God's love, God's love, God's love, but they don't really talk about what that is, aside to basically say that you're free to do whatever you want to, which is not correct. It's not the doctrine of the Lord. And somehow there won't be any consequences for it. Anyway, but now let's get into hate. Because as I said, as we began here, about 20 minutes ago, as I said when we started here, hate has gotten a bad rap. Even if they fail to define it, even if they ill define it in the modern church, they talk about love all day long. You walk into any church and you got a better, probably 90% chance they're going to say something about love, 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 love at each other, loving God. God loves you. Jesus says that we're all children of God, blah, blah, blah. They can talk about love, but they're not going to talk about hate. Hate has gotten a bad rap, I'm telling you. Which is one thing you're not supposed to do is hate. And of course, we live in a satanic society where everything is inverted. Those who lecture you about not hating are the biggest haters. No, they really are. That doesn't, I don't want to sound like some crappy tier meme with that, you know. The ones who claim not to hate are the real haters, but they do. Those who go around and lecture and talk about, you shouldn't be so hateful. Oh, you're full of hate. Hate, hate, hate. They point and accuse everybody of hate. And yet, they're the ones with hate boiling up in their heart. How many of you, and myself, I've been called a hater many times. And yet I don't. It's a lie. It's a lie from hell. You know, I don't go around living my life with hate. I don't. It's not a cop-out. It's not a, I'm supposed to say that. That way people can't accuse me. It's just the truth. I can't picture a more miserable way to live life than to go around just constantly feeling the emotion of hate. I mean, that would just be draining. In fact, for that matter, going around feeling a constant emotion of anything would be draining. But hate has gotten a bad rap. Hate has gotten a bad rap. They tell you you're not supposed to hate ever. But that's not. It's not what's written here. Let's go ahead and pick up with verse 19. Surely that, because we just covered everything we've just read, is all about, you know, God, you're with me. God, you don't abandon me. God, you love me. I love you. If I tried to get away, I couldn't. God is not looking to bail out of me. This is just this upbeat. And then this very same psalm. We haven't changed psalms. We're in the same psalm. And now we're flipping the switch and we're going to talk about the opposite side of the coin. Surely that will slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, ye bloody men. I will slay the wicked. We just changed gears, right? I mean, we just flipped it over now. We talked about the whole first part of this. We talked all a lot about love, about God's love and God's presence. But now we're flipping. We got to read the opposite side of the coin. Surely that will slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, ye bloody men. He's not saying, God, please don't slay the wicked. Depart from me, bloody men who seek my life. men who smear me, men who live on lies, false accusations, be gone from me. For they speak against thee wickedly, and thine enemies take thy name in vain. All of these posers. We did the Friday Daily Nationalist, and it was about, I don't know, some, I don't know. I was there for the show. Yes, I do know. It was about some LARPing priest in the Church of England, you know, preaching the doctrine of Satan of do what thou wilt instead of God's will be done. And all of these people, we got all these people they point to, you know, and we got lesbian ministers doing gay marriages and all this other nonsense. You know, they speak against thee wickedly and thy enemies take thy name in vain. They don't preach the word of God. They speak wickedly. They don't think God's going to do anything. This world we live in is one wicked blasphemy after another. These people do what they do because they think God isn't going to do anything. Do not I hate them, O Lord, that hate thee. They hate God. These people that we see in this world that run around and embrace and they love the lie. They hate God. You cannot love the lie and hate and not hate God. They hate God. Do I not hate them, O Lord, that hate thee? They hate God. They hate the truth. You look at this, we talk about you know, the anti-white race hate agenda, and it is definitely coupled with the anti-Christ hate agenda. Do I not hate them that hate thee, O God? And am not I grieved with those that rise up against thee? When you look around and you see all these people, this society that has risen up in rebellion against God, and in their arrogance and pride, they say, we will do this, we will do that. God bless America. We can do anything, you know. They rise up in pride. They rise up against God. They say, we can do whatever. We can promote every sort of degeneracy we want to. We can promote every sort of lie we want to. We can oppress the powerless all we want to. And God will do nothing because what can we do? What can they do? They rise up against God. And am I not grieved with them? When you look at Clown World, and we make jokes about Clown World, but when you look at it, are you not grieved by it? You look at this upside down world, this backwards, bizarre world, and are we not grieved by it? I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them mine enemies. This is why I said it's a shame that the church has abandoned the Old Testament instead of linking it with the New as it's supposed to be. I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them mine enemies. You know, they say you can know a man by his friends. Well, let me tell you something. You can know a whole lot about a man by his enemies. When the world hates you, when those who embrace the lie hate you, when those who promote the lie hate you, when those who promote oppression hate you, the liars, the backstabbers, when they hate you, you know, those are God's enemies. They are in opposition to God. They rise up against God. If your enemies happen to be God's enemies, you're probably more or less where you're supposed to be. You know, we always striving to improve, but you're more or less where you're supposed to be. Where you're supposed to be. I hate them with perfect hatred, and I count them mine enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Search my heart, O God. Make sure I don't get sucked in with these people. Search me and lead me in the way everlasting. Don't let me get caught up like them. Keep me close. You know everything about me, God. Search my heart. We don't want to hide anything. Scary, the idea that God knows everything about us. It's actually reassurance because you don't have to worry about explaining things. You don't have to worry about any of that. God, search my heart. Don't let me get caught up or be like these. I hate with a perfect hatred. You see, like I said, hate has gotten a bad rap. You're never going to see hate being even mentioned, except in a negative term. Of course, what we're not talking about here is hate out of pride, you know, like somebody's just personally disrespecting. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about hating that which God hates. When you become in tune with God and you see those who rise up and take his name in vain and have nothing to, you know, they're in opposition to God, and they lie and they blaspheme and they promote all of these things. You know, when you hate that which God hates, you hate wickedness, you hate evil, and you say, God, search my heart that I don't get caught up in that. I want to be as close to you as I can. You see, that is a righteous hate. That's what he's talking about here. He says, I hate with a perfect hatred. You know, I refuse it. You hate it because it is in opposition to God. It's not about a personal pride because somebody disrespected you or said something you did just personally didn't like. It's about hating that which God is about being in tune with God. And that's why we have this final part. Search my heart out. Keep me in tune with you, O God. I not go off on doing my own thing. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. I thought it'd be just kind of an interesting thing to look at, because again, hate's gotten a bad rap. Like it's always a negative thing, and it's not, as we just read here. If we hate that which the Lord hates, then ultimately we're on the right path. If we hate that which is in opposition to God, if we hate the same things that God hates, then we're on the right path to truly knowing and understanding and appreciating God's love. We're going to wrap up on that note. Thank you for joining us this week. I hopefully enjoyed the discussion. Don't forget, I am on Fridays with Sven for the Daily Nationalist. We always have a fun time. We missed out for a few weeks there with Christmas and all going on, and he had stuff going, and I got sick right after Christmas. So, you know, but hey, we are back and we are doing that. And it's always a fun discussion. So you might want to be sure and check that out. And as I say every week, be sure and come back and check us out next week right here for the Parish of the Patriots.